Hola, everybody. It is Tuesday, April 14th, 2020. And took another sabbatical. Things were just kind of a little nuts for my personal job with all this mass hysteria going on. And I think I personally took a small sabbatical from doing a podcast regularly is because when things like this happen, it's kind of like 9/11. It's like, it takes you a couple of weeks to really figure out what you're thinking about it and what it actually means to you and whatnot and everything that's implied with all of this. And as far as the episode today goes, I'm going to talk about Passover. And I'll probably draw some parallels with the mass hysteria thing. And there'll definitely be a, instead of Orion rants, there'll be a small part of this podcast of what grinds Orion's gears. Because there's just a few really irksome things about people's reaction to this whole thing that are just driving me absolutely mad. But, anyways, Passover thoughts. I think it's kind of ironic that this whole boogeyman virus thing that's going on is really shedding a light onto why the Passover story in the Old Testament and the New, obviously, New Testament, are really pertinent and are really meaningful. Now, this year for Passover, what I did for my family and for my kids, I focused and centered the message, because we do Passover at home. My personal family has done Passover in our home for quite a while. Church congregation we attend typically does it together as a congregation. But at home this year, I made the message primarily about freedom or tyranny, freedom or slavery. Because for those who don't know the Passover story, the Israelites were slaves to the Egyptian system. And that land in Hebrew was called Mitzrayim. Or if you just say it straight in English, it looks like Mitzrayim. And that in Hebrew means a mound or a fortress. I think mound is a fairly neutral term, but fortress kind of implies something strong. But I think in the context of the Hebrews, it was also malevolent, or at least it progressively got malevolent over the course of their 400 years of enslavement. But I think the relevance and the reason I personally went down the rabbit hole of boiling the story down to freedom and slavery is because the response that the Western countries are taking to this boogeyman virus, this Kung Flu virus, is plunging the entire world into tyranny. It's plunging every Western country into tyranny, into mass. It's like a technocracy almost, not democracy or not republic or whatever form of government, but more of like a technocracy. Because what's being born out of all of this, there's this jelly baby being born of everybody having to listen to some proposed health professional who was not elected but gets to dictate what social policy is and gets to dictate and suggest how we live our lives day to day. And there's even Bill Gates is proposing some gelatin form of vaccine ID to be injected into people. So you can go to work if you have the right antibodies. And these people are just, they're number one, they're unelected. Okay, they might be professionals, but unelected people don't get to infringe upon your rights. And the parallel, I guess I don't want to get too far down those rabbit holes because I've already mentioned all that, but back to Passover. The Passover story is God intervening to free subjugated people. And if you're a Christian, that's what is going to happen to the world in the future, is that God, through Christ, is going to have to intervene to save a subjugated people. And just as the Israelites were subjugated and total oppression, you know, they worked 7 days a week on Pharaoh's public works programs, you know, building monuments, I guess, so we're told, and whatever. But that's exactly what's coming in the future, if you've read the book. That's what it says. Christ says if he didn't intervene, no flesh would be spared alive. So, total subjugation. And I made the story this year for my kids about freedom versus slavery. And then this is kind of where I feel I want to take it for now, the story anyways, is once we got through that story, it was, you know, it was physical slavery versus physical freedom that God was offering the Israelites. And then the New Testament story of Passover is Jesus Christ offering people spiritual freedom versus spiritual slavery. And I want to dive into what spiritual slavery is. So, because it draws parallels to physical slavery. Physical slavery is when you have a lord or a master or a king or a governor of some sort. I use the word governor because that literally means to control. That dictates what you do. It dictates how you live your life. You don't have any freedom. You don't have a First Amendment. You don't have a Bill of Rights. You don't have freedoms that are inherent within you because you're created by God. So that's physical slavery. Well, spiritual slavery are false and bad ideas that cause you to believe lies. So when you believe lies, you are enslaved to bad ideas to where you're not free. So I'll give you an example. I'll give you the example that I gave my sons. And I'm going to use my grandmother, you know, God bless her, she's a great woman. She's also religious. And I drew this parallel for my kids. So, excuse me, if you're unacquainted with this idea, just bear with me and ride out the explanation and the comparison I'm going to lay out here. Even if you don't believe it, the comparison that I'm going to use will make sense as to why we need to be free and why we need to be spiritually free and what spiritual slavery actually is. So here's the example. I believe, my wife and what we teach our kids about death is that when you die, you're not going to heaven or hell or purgatory. Those are lies. Those are man-made inventions. Those are systems of fear used that were created to control people. We believe that when you die, you die. You're dead. It's similar to when you're asleep. So the only way you actually know you're sleeping is when you wake up. I mean, unless you're dreaming, obviously, but typically in your dreams, you don't know you're sleeping. It's very rare, at least for me, when I'm dreaming, where I realize I'm dreaming. It's like, oh yeah, I'm asleep. So when you're dead, you're dead. You don't have consciousness. There's nothing. It's a void. You're shut off. So we believe that when you die, that's what's going to happen to you. It's not going to be this pain. You're not going to be burning in the flames of hell. And you're not going to be floating around the gates of heaven with Peter and a naked baby with wings flying by shooting people with heart arrows. But the hope that we have in this belief is that when we die, the next thing we'll remember is that we'll be brought back to life will be resurrected from the dead. Because that is the hope that Christ brings to people. That is the promise. That if it says, in one man all die, or in Adam all die, because Adam sinned and we're all descendants of Adam, and in Christ all shall be made alive. That's every human being that's ever lived. So there's the truth. That is the truth. That is the reality of what's going to happen. That is the absolute fact. Is that everybody who's ever lived, and everyone who's dead, and everyone that's going to die, will be resurrected back to life. So there's hope. Because heaven's coming to the planet. You're not going to die and mysteriously float up or down or sideways. That would be heaven, hell, or purgatory. Those are lies. And if you believe the lie of hell, I'm not saying hell isn't a place or that it's not a thing. I'm saying the theology that surrounds it. This eternal chasm of fire that your soul is going to leave your body and go down to, and you're going to get tortured by demons. That's all a lie. But if that's what you believe, that's going to enslave you and cause you to behave, act, think, and do things falsely. You're going to do things out of fear. So let's say you want to be a Christian, or you want to be a believer in God, and you have this false idea of hell, and not wanting to go to hell is the thing that's motivating you to serve God. Well, you're eventually going to reject that system, because fear only motivates you for so long, right? So to get back to my grandmother, my grandmother, you know, God bless her. I'm not picking on her. She believes these things. And she's wrong, but it influences her thoughts. It has influenced her life. And honestly, it's such a... this belief, for this specific example of something that she believes is false, it has really limited her in her character and her personal development as a human being. Because I've briefly explained this before with my grandmother present, and she cannot grasp it. She just cannot grasp the idea. Because the lie that she believes is so deeply ingrained, and that's how she's lived her life since the 30s, or the late 20s when she was born. Her operating system, her religion, is a system of fear that she has subjugated herself to. So she is a spiritual slave of a false idea. So when you know the truth, when you understand a truthful concept, it makes you free, because you don't have to worry. See, a fear-based system, or a fear-based belief system, or a fear-based idea is false, and it enslaves you. So to have spiritual freedom is to know the truth. And with my kids, I got into this because we observe this Passover holiday, and it happens to be a week long. And the dictates of this holiday is that you clean your dwelling and get rid of all the leavening, to get all the yeast. So wherever you may have eaten food in your house, and it may have had, you know, you were eating bread or pizza or something had leavening in it, you got to clean it out and get rid of it. And I won't go into the parallels and what all that means, because it's not the point of the story. And the boys, my kids, often lament how laborious such an activity is, because it takes about a week to get everything cleaned. We clean out our cars, we clean our whole kitchen, we clean every room, we vacuum it all up, wash all our clothes, blah, blah, blah. And boy, do they hate it. So when it came to Passover time, I posed the question to my kids. I said, okay, so we observe all these laws, and my grandma doesn't. She maybe observes two of God's laws. Maybe three. Don't lie, don't steal, and don't commit adultery. Most Christians observe those things, or agree they should be observed upon. So I posed the question to my children. I said, so if my grandma only has three laws that she has to obey, and we have, 613 or something? We don't do all of them, so let's just, for brevity, say 20. So if my grandma only observes three, and we observe 20, isn't my grandmother more free? And my children were loving this because they thought, yeah, if Passover is about more freedom, then yeah, maybe we should do something that makes us more free. Which is, you know, follow less laws, follow less rules. And so I gave them this parallel. I said, when you practice something that's false, you are enslaved to a wrong idea. And I don't feel like I'm really pinpointing it like I did on Passover night for my kids. But when I used the concept of heaven and hell and the truth about it, I displayed to my kids that if to be a spiritual slave is to not do things that are truthful. And what is truth? Well, God's laws are truth. We're told that in Psalms 119, longest book in the whole Bible, and every Christian ignores what it means. God's laws, which are his commandments, which are things that he wants his people to do, are truth. They are light. They are life. And yeah, it's not fun cleaning your house once a year at least to get all the leavening out. But it proposes the reality of what this life is and what it's for. So that you're not deceived, and that so you do not believe a lie, and so that you're actually doing what you're here to do, and you're doing something meaningful. I know this kind of has taken a bunch of twists and turns, but a lot of these parallels as to what's going on are pretty relevant, pretty pertinent. And to take a branch off of this spiritual enslavement idea that I was trying to relay to my children, I think it's pertinent to say that there's a radical and gigantic throbbing pus-filled zit in the Christian community of whatever denomination, where all these churches and all these choirs and all these Christians and all these people are banding together over the internet to sing hymns to quote-unquote congregate, because they believe the lie that this boogeyman virus and this Kung Flu somehow mysteriously has the authority, because someone said it did, to keep you from congregating in church, when the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States grants no authority for anyone to tell an American citizen that they can't congregate together. So the spiritual slavery going on here, the spiritual enslavement, is the blindness to the rites that you have that, number one, God told you to do at least once a week on the Sabbath day, and or his holy high Sabbath days like Passover, and also the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. But the blindness and the spiritual slavery is coming from everybody believing all this mass hysteria. So the story of Passover is more relevant than ever. It's almost as if we're inviting, and Christians are willingly succumbing and kneeling down to, some oppressive form of tyranny that's dictating how you need to live your life for the rest of your life, in fear of some boogeyman. And I'm not saying that you can't get sick and die. The reality is you could always get sick and die. Always. You can come down. Everybody could come down with cancer tomorrow. I'm not saying everyone at one time, but you could wake up and have cancer tomorrow. So the times and the parallels are pertinent to point out. And that's what I wanted to do today. We are it seems like we're entering into a time where spiritual enslavement is evident because people believe lies and they act out their lives and their actions and the things they believe based on these lies, to where all of humanity is in lockstep. And if you know what I'm getting at when I say lockstep, some of you will get that, some of you won't. We're going to march into a worldwide system of Egypt, of Egyptian-type slavery, where it'll be total tyranny, where this superstructure that's being created will dictate everything based on what they say about health and the public health and the public good and everything that you should be doing as a free human is now going to be taken away from you. But it's okay, we can still go to church on the internet. Give me a break.